Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to part two of the French Connections Thursday edition on this 30th day of March 2006. My name is Daryl Bradford Smith, as you all are aware already. We have a returning guest, a friend of mine, and somebody that I have the highest regard for. He's got a kindness and a directness and a wisdom that rare people possess, and it's great always to have just general conversations with him about the way things are going. And he's somebody who has watched the events of the world unfold quite, he's been on top of this story of unfolding in the world for many, many decades, in fact, and becoming, I'm going to let Sabah El-Mokhtar speak for himself. But Sabah, welcome.
Thank you, Darrell. It's always a pleasure to have a free platform to speak on, because these days we are being all steamrolled, and we are all being pushed into corners, and we are all being pigeonholed, and we are all being told what to think and what to say and what not to say. And this is contrary to the free spirit which we are supposedly going through in this century.
Well, you know, there's an interesting thing that I just shared with my listeners in the first section, and it was that they were doing a report in about Paris, about homelessness, and there were these two men that did a report. They made believe they were homeless, and they walked around the streets of Paris homeless, and they looked like terrible. They smelled bad, and they went to several businesses to ask for food. Do you know the only places that people gave them food and let them sit down and eat were Arab businesses? Now, this is something I know, because I live in a country where there's a 10% Arab population, and I know the hospitality of the Arab community. But see, the listeners in America are not aware of just how wonderful this community has always been. They're very welcoming people. Am I accurate in sharing that?
Yes, I think you're right. And by the way, it's not. I don't think it's a race issue. I think it is the tendency of the people. I'm sure when you go to the USA, the communities which are quote unquote underdeveloped or less developed or having difficulties, the people there are friendlier. They are easier to talk to. They are kinder than when you go to affluent societies, because we get into the position where we tell ourselves that, you know, all those people who come and ask for help, in fact, they don't deserve it, because they are not as they seem to be.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it is probably an idea which relates to, if you are hungry, then you feel the hunger of others. If you are homeless, then you feel the need of the homeless. If you have the food and have the shelter, you either don't understand the problem of the other, or if you try and understand it, you would still say it is their fault, or maybe, because we become all people who don't believe what we see, we say, oh, maybe he's just putting it up because he's really a bad person, he's trying to beg around.
Well, you know, I don't think that's entirely true, and I'm going to disagree with you a little bit. I mean, my experience in France, Mohammed Sabah, is that when I go to my friends' houses who are Arabs, some of the warmest hospitality I've ever experienced in my life, and I've been everywhere on this planet. And it is part of your culture to be welcoming and in this way. And it's the reason I'm bringing it up, and I think it's important, is because the Muslim community and the North African community and many others have been vilified in America. And most people don't know the hospitality of this group. They're not aware of the kindness of these people. What they do believe is that they're barbarians, and that they're going to try to attack them and try to take over them, and nothing could be farther from the truth.
Well, I absolutely agree that this is really the perception which is being peddled by the media, which is principally a Zionist conspiracy.
Yeah.
It tries to show, because we have to find enemies. The USA had the first enemy with the communists and communism and the Soviet Union and what have you. When that one collapsed, we have to find an enemy, and the enemy we have found is Islam.
Yep.
And as far as the Zionist movement is based on the idea that you have people who came from all parts of the world, whether they are New York or Warsaw or Berlin or indeed even Yemen or Morocco, kicked out the inhabitants of Palestine and occupied their territory. So, of course, they would have to demonize the Arabs and the Muslims because they are, quote-unquote, the enemy.
Yeah.
So it is. This is how the picture is drawn by the media of the Arabs and of the Muslims. Obviously,
yeah,
there are among the Arabs and the Muslims people who are bad. There are people,
yeah,
who are terrorists. There are all sorts of things. But they are no different from any other race, any other people. The Arabs, as you've said, in fact, and they are welcoming people. They are decent people. The history shows that no one was persecuted by the Arabs or the Muslims. In fact, all the persecutions that happened throughout the ages were by non-Arabs and non-Muslims, and the Arabs and the Muslims were the victims along with others. So everybody in the West talk about the Spanish Inquisition as if it was directed at the Jews. In fact, principally it was directed at the Muslims. And the Jews were among the people who were persecuted. The Muslim community were the people who were persecuted. The Muslims didn't have the so-called Holocaust. They didn't start the Second World War, Third World War, First World War. It wasn't them. It was other nations who did that. So this picture, the demonization of this group of people is unhelpful. It is not true. It is really, it makes a lot of people gain enemies unnecessarily.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it is definitely, it's misguided, misinformed, and it is unethical, unprincipled, and it is simply not true.
I agree with every single one of those statements, Sabah, and I got to be honest with you. When you brought up World Zionism, it's what we treat more often than not on this program. And why? Because we've uncovered the fact that they've got a conspiracy well underway to be dominant in the world, and they're going to do it through their control of the media, their control of the financial system, and their control of rare and important resources. And all of those things are well advanced on in their planning. But here's the thing. They have been extraordinarily effective at keeping the rest of the world on the wrong foot, always backfooting everybody. I mean, we're never able to get traction on the facts as they are truly set up in the world. What we're basically trying to do constantly is fight back against what they're doing next, and we never get a chance to really investigate the facts of history. And we're finding out today that most of the problems of our world in the last 100 years are directly linked to this group.
Well, certainly. I mean, there at one time or another, there was this talk of the Protocol of Zion, and everybody said that it was a put-up job. It's not true. It is not factual. It is all sorts of accusations of this book. But at the end of the day, let's assume they are all correct, that this is really not a real book, and it was not the Protocols of Zion. This is an incredible insight some 100 years ago to show what the position nowadays, the control over the media, the education, the law, the medicine,
yep,
and more importantly, is to create this idea that if you criticize, then you must be bad. The incredible thing that people criticize even God and criticize Jesus and criticize Muhammad and criticize all the prophets and on the beliefs of the people, and they criticize the politicians, and they criticize everything. And you can rewrite, and you can criticize all events in history, whether it's the American Civil War, or whether the British wars, or whether the independence, or Napoleon, or any of the older wars, the Romans and what have you. You can criticize all these things, you can talk about these things the way that really suits your wishes or your research, except you can never criticize the idea which relates in even in the furthest possibility to the Jews, to Zionism, to the politics of Israel, because these are areas where you can never touch because you will be accused of anti-Semitism. And this is the, so it's not only you invent and you work on the basis of creating these situations that you control the world, but you also create the mechanism by which anyone who criticizes this hegemony is found to be anti-Semitic. And anti-Semitism is something you can be anti-Jew, you can be anti-blacks, anti-Asians, anti-Muslims, anti-monarchy, anti-anything you want. But you cannot be anti-Semitic. Because if you become anti-Semitic, then you have really stepped the line that it was drawn by the Zionists, that no one should pass it. You get to a situation where you can't even examine historical facts. You know, when you look at the quote unquote the Holocaust, they've got to the point where we, the Muslims, who feel that we had our own Holocaust, for instance, in Afghanistan or for instance in Iraq, we had the USA killing 500,000 civilians.
Yeah.
And if that is not a Holocaust, I don't know what a Holocaust is. But you cannot. You are criticized even for calling it a Holocaust, because the Holocaust is something which is exclusively unique. No one can use it. We have a patent for it for the Zionist purposes, so no one can even say that.
Well,
this,
so
is, this is how they control the media.
Yes, they do, and in fact, then but they've got a very sophisticated web of operatives throughout the world, and in France, and in Britain, and in Sweden, and in Switzerland, everywhere, and throughout America, through organizations like the Jewish American Congress, or the APEC, or the JDL, or B'nai B'rith organization, where they call out the dogs, and they all act in unison. These, and it's not a big group, Sabah. There may be a couple of million of these people actually bottling up the entire world. And they do it with large sums of money and very, very vicious intimidations.
Yes, absolutely. And that is, this intimidation, it goes way beyond what dictators implement. It goes beyond what security services does. It goes beyond what terrorist organization manage to do. Because all these things, somehow you can either hide or circumvent or have a protection by somebody, except if you touch on Zionism. There you have no escape, whether you get persecuted by the community, by the media, and even indeed in many countries, the legislation in these countries make you a criminal for even thinking or saying something. You know, it beats me as a lawyer. How can a sophisticated society, which is based on the freedom of expression, it goes in Europe, in Britain, it is based on that one, and yet we have now legislations which actually prosecute people for thinking.
Yeah.
And this is really, if it was done by dictators in Iraq or in Libya or in any other dictatorship in Latin America, or indeed even in the democracy of the USA during the McCarthyism period, it is really, it goes way beyond what they have done in these countries.
Well, you know, you're absolutely correct, and I got to be honest with you, there is something changing, and I've shared this with you privately. The traction across the nation is beginning in the other direction. We are finally at a point where, well, and let me set you up for this. This group, this APEC group, and this JDL group have been caught repeatedly spying on America, stealing state secrets, selling this important military information to China, taking things from the Pentagon, obfuscating and criminally confiscating different things. And finally, it's starting to come out, and they can't put all the fires out. It has come to the point now where the country is ablaze with corruption from this group, and there are so many fires burning that they don't have the manpower to shut it all down. And we are gaining ground, and the traction is happening. The truth is coming out, and these people, days are numbered, Sabah. We've got them, and we've got them by the neck. And I'm telling you, if you watched my numbers on this broadcast, and if you watched the country and the reporting, just the regular news items that you see on the Internet, 6-8 months ago, you'd see one item about Jews' criminality. Today, you see about half of the stories are about that. Same with the message boards, same with the forums, same with all of the postings that you find. We are getting traction. This is a remarkable moment in history.
I agree with you fully, and I think it, you know, to understand this, I have lived under dictatorships, and I know how it feels and how it works. The mechanics of it is that if the inhibition of those who are oppressed disappears by hearing people like yourself and like your program and like the similar programs and agendas, when people begin to hear that there are people who are saying things, that is when you break that barrier. And once you break the barrier, then the movement will be extremely fast. Look what happened in the Soviet Union. Gorbachev started glasnost and perestroika.
Yep.
And that was just simply allowing people a little bit of a freedom to express themselves. Immediately, that evil empire collapsed. And this is the situation with Zionism. At the present moment, until now, people were so afraid to talk about it that everybody towed the line. So even people who were racist or who were Nazis or who were whatever their political views were, they dare not talk. But now that there are brave people who are saying things, that allows the inhibition and the fear barrier disappears. And once this disappears, then you have the flood, because what is being imposed on us is wrong, unethical, immoral, contrary to our humanity. We are not allowed to do the things that normal, average human beings want to do, and that is the freedom. When we see this and the wall of fear disappears, of course we will all recognize the idiocy and the hideousy of this attitude which is being imposed on us, and we will all speak, everybody, and thereafter it is no longer only the brave who will talk. Mr. Average will talk, because he has lost this wall of fear. And I think that's why we are gaining ground, because people like you and like your programs, who are really removing these complexes of fear, allowed more people to begin to say, ah, I can say this. You know, there are other people who are saying it. So it must be okay for me to think what I actually think is right.
Did you remember our first visit together? I guess it was about, it's about a year ago.
And that's right, yeah.
We didn't discuss these issues then.
No.
We talked about Iraq. We talked about Saddam. We talked about the British response. But sometime in June and July, when we started, you know what changed my life, Sabah? It was listening to Benjamin Friedman.
Oh, yeah.
This man, Benjamin Friedman, was a Zionist. He was involved in the Balfour document signings back in the turn of the century, back in 1914. This man was an insider who said he woke up to the truth about Zionism and blew the whistle on it, and spent his entire life's fortune trying to tell the world what Zionists were going to do to the world. And his 1961 speech that we have on the website is the most powerful audio file I have ever heard in my life. It is devastating. And when you hear it, you find out that these people are responsible for the murder of over 100 million people in 100 years.
I strongly recommend it to all your listeners. I would urge them to take the time and listen to it, because this is really one from a person who is knowledgeable. Secondly, he is addressing an issue which, one, he knows about it very well. Secondly, he is addressing it in an objective way. He is putting the facts. He is explaining the situation, and he is revealing so much information that we did not know. We, the average people, did not know. I strongly recommend all your listeners to actually look at this website, look at it, and listen to it. Find it, because it will give them an insight. And if anyone who listens to it and then they have objections or questions, they are more than welcome and more than happy. I'm sure your program will entertain their questioning.
Yep.
But it needs people to actually really listen to it with an open mind rather than preconceived ideas. And then sanity and logic and fairness will lead them to the right conclusion.
Well, and you're absolutely right. And what I've been asking is I've been asking for the help of the Jewish community because they have been the group lied to the most. In other words, what happens from their own community when the Zionists are under threat, they say the world's trying to kill us. The world's trying to kill us. You have to come to our side, our aid. And they're the group in the world who has been brainwashed the most. And what's happening on my site, every day I get a new email from somebody in the Jewish community. And what they tell me is, I didn't know this stuff. Well, it's the same response I get from the Christian community, except they've got contacts within their own community that may help move this thing to its completion so we can eradicate this whole mess more quickly because, of course, we're going to start chipping away at their entire base of support more quickly if we can have more of this Jewish community involved with us.
Of course, and the biggest lie in the whole exercise is this linkage between the political movement, which is Zionism,
yep.
with Judaism as a religion.
Yep.
And this is an absolute rubbish. It's just like anyone who tries, including Osama bin Laden, to say that those fundamentalists, those who are committing crimes, if those people say, we represent Islam and we are Islam and you cannot believe in Islam unless you believe in us, this is an absolute fallacy. And the same thing applies to Christianity. All those people who believe in any religion, and in particular Judaism and the Jews, the biggest lie they have, and that is where they have to break from it, that is the linkage between Zionism and Judaism.
Yep.
They are two absolutely distinct, separate things.
Yep.
Judaism is a religion. Whether one believes in it or not from non-Jews is another matter. But for Jews who respect their religion, who believe in Judaism, they are being told that to be a Jew, you have to be a Zionist. And that is absolute rubbish. It's not even fundamentalism of Judaism, because within the religion, Judaism, within the religion itself, there are very religious Jews who get to the point of fundamentalism in their approach, but they even those people are not Zionists unless they want to become part of a political movement. And this is really the biggest lie that the Jews need to address. The rest of the people who don't believe in Judaism because they are Christians or Muslims or Hindus or Buddhists or whatever their religion is, they don't have this problem. They can look at Zionism and they look at it and they say, well, it is acceptable or not acceptable. The problem the Jews have is that because when they look at Zionism, they cannot criticize it as freely as the other religions because they think this is, because they've been told, because they lied to them, they've been told that this is part of your religion, which is absolutely nonsensical, and it is not true. And
well, I got to agree with all of those things. Now, here's the interesting thing, though, and you're going to notice this kind of breaks away from religion and goes back to human nature. Because these people have been ensconced in power so long, and I've often made a statement that they're 0.01% of the world's population, but in fact, they in America, for example, all of our media is controlled by them. All of our major industries have most of their stockholders at the top from this group. The Rothschilds have an estimated $400 trillion worth of value in raw materials and commodity values and whatnot. This group has become so rich, so filthy rich, so sickeningly rich on the backs of the rest of the world that they're not going to let that go. They're not going to let it go without fighting. The fact is all of that money is stolen money from the hard back and brow and sweat and tears of the world's poorest people. And the simple fact of the matter is I don't believe in communism, and I don't believe in taking from the rich to give to the poor, but I do believe in taking from the thief and returning the money back to the victims.
Absolutely.
And in the situation that we're in right now, they're not going to give that stuff back without a fight.
No, that's right. That is the role of your program and people like you who are saying to us, all of us, that look, examine this objectively, examine it rationally, examine it from an intelligent way, and see whether your instinct, your human instinct, allows you to accept this situation. And I'm sure every sensible person will come to the point of saying, I don't accept this one. Now, how you change it, everyone has their own ways of doing it. And whether they are in politics, or they are in industry, or they are in business, or they are in authority, or whatever, each one will do his best to try and actually give us all the freedom that we need to have from this fear.
But we don't see. But see, here's the problem, Sabah, and this is what we're going to face in the near future, because we are going to take these people down. We're going to be faced with an industry in Hollywood that is 95% controlled by this group. Now, how do you go into an organization like Hollywood and say, you can't be part of this anymore because you've stolen your way to this success? You've obfuscated your way to this success. You've intimidated your way to this success. You've criminally attained these positions of power within this most powerful place, world position. And then you can take a look at it in the finances. When we talk about our banking structure, where the entire Federal Reserve System is owned by 13 Jewish families, and that means every dollar that is ever used in this whole world pays, seniorage to this group. The simple facts, as you start laying them out, is that we're going to have to do an entire system redo. The system will not stand as it presently is constructed, because the construct is in their favor almost entirely.
Yes, except that there are two ways of doing things. There are the way whereby you erase the situation and rebuild from scratch. And there are the, although it's slower, but it is possible to make dramatic changes. The people who listen, they have a choice. They can say, we are not going to see this film in Hollywood because this one is trying to peddle intellectual poison.
Yep.
We are not going to deal with this bank because this one is based on robbing the poor of their rights. We will not deal with this. We will not buy this commodity because this commodity is coming from a tarnished source. So this is one way of doing it. I'm sure you are right that ultimately, at the end of the day, when you have to destructure and restructure, it's going to be a mammoth job.
Yeah.
But at the same time, the step we are taking now is, one, your program is exposing this situation.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, your program is drawing people's attention to their inner power, power of choice on every level, whether it's the political scene or whether it's the financial or the economic or the education or any of, and indeed the media. People do have the choice. So you are highlighting this strength of the individual. Three, you are also talking about your programs and your guests. They are talking about how do you destructure the existing situation. I'm confident that though it might take a little longer, but we are heading in that way because I would like to be modest about it, not because we are clever, but because the enemy has such an immoral, so obviously wrong position, it is visible to anybody whose heart is open to see reality.
That's right. That's right. And here's the interesting thing. Let's draw. Let's do a little. For instance, you remember 10, 15 years ago when South Africa was coming out of its malaise, out of its Oppenheimer installed government down there. This Bora war government that was put in there by Cecil B. Rhodes, where they had this apartheid, where they had this most heinous two-tiered system where blacks were relegated to permanent poverty and the whites kind of siphoned off the top of them, and then the rich got richer on their sweat and mineral rights in their country. And some of the most awful things that came out of that place, the tortures, the murders, the terrible things. And yet, on this program, I talked to somebody named Professor McGowan from the United States, who said in his professional and scholastic opinion, present-day Israel dwarfs the heinous acts of South Africa at its worst in Palestine and the Palestinian occupied areas. They've murdered small children. They break the arms of children who throw victory signs so they can never lift their arm again. They, if they throw a rock, they shoot them down. And then today I watch on the news as a man who in the IDF, the Israeli Defense Force, which is a lie because they're not defending anything except criminality, shot this young girl named 13 years old, I don't know her name, Palestinian girl. And not only was he exonerated of the murder, he was given all his back pay on top of it. Why? Because the Zionists believe that non-Jews are lower than cattle. And in their Zionist courtroom, they could never convict somebody of shooting a cow.
This position, I was going to, actually, when you were talking about South Africa, I was going to raise with you this issue, that in fact the situation, even in South Africa, at the end of the day there, no one dared to say you have a democracy in South Africa. Everybody, West, East, underdeveloped, developed countries, everybody called it an apartheid regime. Well, you have in Israel now where the Jews are the superior race, they are the people who came from outside kicking out the nationals. Those people are being called the democracy, the only democracy in the Middle East. Listen to the American administration as if they don't understand the concept of democracy. Democracy is the rule of the majority. It doesn't mean democracy of the rule, democracy between the minority who rules, because this is something which is so simple to understand that even children in politics or people who are just learning, they know this is. Yet you have the United States government in all of its levels, including other countries like the European countries, like the United Nations, call Israel a democracy, when in fact it is visible that there are people who came from the Soviet Union, people who came from Ireland, from New York, who are there in this land. They had nothing to do with this land, kicked out the people who they were born there, and everybody in their ancestors was born there. They kick them out, and you end up with somebody who is an Irishman next to a Frenchman, next to a German, next to a Moroccan, but they adhere to Judaism. In fact, they adhere to Zionism rather than Judaism. Those people, because they are equal between themselves in the election, then this is the mother of all democracies. And this really, you see, to commit a crime is bad. But when you have the institution justifying it and supporting it, that is where the cancer comes from.
Yes. Yes, and it is. It's a cancer on the human body, on the body of humanity. And here's the thing, though. We've all heard little snippets of the horror. And of course, even the Americans now are starting to understand. And I mean, listen, Sabah, growing up in America, I saw this terrible nation's history being played out on lies about history, played out on my television every night. They always had something about Israel this, Israel that, Israel this, Israel that. I never could wrap my brain around why they were showing this place all this. You know. And finally, when I understood the truth, Sabah, about what really is going on there, my stomach got sick, and I said to myself, this is the biggest lie ever perpetrated against the human family in the history of humanity.
That's absolutely right. But let me tell you, the Arabs and the Muslims, in their culture nowadays, they believe that the end of Israel and Zionism is going to be at the hands of the United States of America, not the Arabs and not the Israelis and not the Muslims. Because the Zionists in the USA are driving everybody to destruction.
Yeah.
And there will come the time that those 99.999 are going to say, look, enough is enough. And that is where those Zionists are going to begin to pay the price. And the price, in the American style, is going to be extremely high. Because the U.S., with its superpower, with its military power, has lost its humanity. When you have Albright, Madeleine Albright, says that the killing of 500,000 children, and I mean 500,000 children, on 60 Minutes program, she was asked, was the price worth it, i.e. to change Saddam Hussein? And that is, incidentally, before he was changed.
Yeah.
That is when they were being killed, those children. She was asked whether the price is worth it, and she hesitated for a split of a second, and she thought it was yes. Now, some 10 years later, and another 1.5 million children, she thought it was not a very fortunate choice of words. That's as far as she's gone. Now, the USA, Albright, whether we like it or we don't like it, she represents the USA. And when we say the USA, we don't mean Bush. We mean the millions of people who are decent people, who are God-fearing people, those people who have morality, ethics, fairness, all these factors in them. But they are totally and absolutely misled. They are represented by those people who, at the end of the day, you end up with the USA, instead, its embassies, instead of being an area for goodwill to the world, they've become, each one of them, has become a fortress.
Yes.
And the blame is always on the terrorist. Now, no one stopped to say, why are the terrorists targeting them? Why aren't they targeting other institutions? Why the United States of America, with all its might, its population, probably three-quarters of the world, they cannot go to it. Three-quarters of the world, the American people, ordinary, Mr. Average, decent American, simply because he is an American, he cannot go there. Because of the policies that the USA follows. And it doesn't matter, at the end of this day, we can talk about the neocons and the Zionists and what have you. Unfortunately, the average American is paying the price of those people who do not deserve to represent the American people. But this is the problem we have, and I think the idea that those people are going to say enough is enough. And with programs like yours, with the writings which we have seen, like Benjamin Friedman and others, these things will make people think again. And I'm sure at the end of the day, we have, again, in our culture, we say that it's only right that will survive. So only things that are right by their nature, substantively, that they will stay around. Anything which is not right will not survive and will not be there.
Well, I've said this on my show before. I cannot live under their rule. I will not live under their rule. And anybody who stands beside me with that sentiment, this is where the line in the sand is being drawn. And once we've drawn the line, all we need from this point forward is for good people not to fear. Just for good people to stand up and say, I'm with you on this. I'm with you. I'm going to stand beside you shoulder to shoulder. And together, that we cannot be defeated, because the truth is a mighty sword. And, you know, here's the other side of this. I mean, we've had people trying to wake us up from the beginning. A mutual friend of ours, Dennis Halliday.
Yeah.
He's faced with this horrible, horrible truth back in the mid-90s. He's watching those young Iraqi children starving, can't get medicines. He's watching Saddam Hussein siphon off the food money and all of this horrible suffering. And this man says, nobody in the Western world is trying to stop this genocide. Nobody. And he couldn't stay in his position. He said, I tried everything in my power to wake people up to what was going on. And finally, he said, in good conscience, I couldn't stay. I couldn't do it. And isn't it amazing that his replacement, Count Hans von Sponeck, another friend of ours, gets into the same position and within a short time comes to the exact same conclusion, and he has to leave in disgust as well?
Absolutely. Compare this with the position of the Secretary General Kofi Annan. And it doesn't matter whether the Americans like him or dislike him, whether they want to keep him or not. Look what Kofi Annan has done. Kofi Annan, 18 months after the invasion of Iraq, he comes out and he says, unashamedly, it was unlawful. The occupation was unlawful. Now, the question is this. In the first instance, was the Secretary General not aware that it is illegal, or was he aware and he kept quiet? And one of them is worse than the other. But, worse still, irrespective of whether he knew and kept quiet or didn't know, for him to have any sense of decency and self-respect for himself and for the position of the Secretary General, he should not have stayed in his position. Because when he is in charge and he knew, whether then or later, he should have said, I am not going to sit here when there is something illegal and there is something not right. Compare the position of this guy with those two chaps who, after a very long period of service in the United Nations, they've resigned their jobs because they are decent people. They have a conscience. They have to sleep at night. Then maybe they have financial problems because having left the jobs or whatever. But those people have a conscience. And I promise you, those people who have conscience are the people who have peace with themselves. And there is nothing like having peace with oneself.
You know, Zeus, you're absolutely right, Sabah. You know, in this world that we have to go head to head with a lot of demons. Most of the demons we face are from inside ourselves. And the truth is that today, right now, as the world starts tipping into financial crisis, America's bankrupt, has spent itself into oblivion. And there are many, many terrible events that they've got planned for us on the horizon. You need to get right with yourself. You need to check your own conscience and get rid of some of those demons inside yourself and say, look, this is the moment in my life that I have to stand up and be counted. You know, they've turned us, by and large, through the media, into hedonists.
Yes.
And the fact is, if you knew how simply I live here, it would shock you. And I got to be honest with you, I bought into that hedonist crap as well, you know, as a younger man, and I thought that that's the way I should live. And why? Because I was buying the media's interpretation of living. I have like a lot less than I used to have as far as creature comforts, and I'm happier than I've ever been. In other words, hedonism and self and chasing that elusive, never attainable happiness through the next purchase, that sickness. And not satisfying what we really are as human beings and communicating and reaching down to help a person up in life and all of that kind of stuff. These kind of events that we are losing because of our acculturation, we've got to put a stop to that along with it. Because if we just inform everybody about Zionism and we don't fix the interior of some of the people that we're living amongst, nothing is going to get fixed.
That's right, but this is what your program has been doing for the last 2 years now.
Well, it's actually 15 months.
15 months. This is really one of the high points which one must really. I don't want to become all sentimental about it, but actually, you need to be congratulated on the wisdom, on the perseverance, on the fairness, on the objectivity, and on the bravery that you're showing in this. And I think the service you're rendering is an extremely, extremely important and very timely one. And in fact, it is producing the results that you have alluded to at the beginning of the program.
Well, you know, but and like I said, though, I mean, and what we're finding, and I'm sure you're finding this in your own life because you've been in this struggle longer than me. The fact is that many communities are starting to ask each other, how can I help? What can I do? What should I do next? We told them one thing. First, get up to speed on what Ben Friedman had to teach you, and then go further. Use that as the base for your education. But more than that, Start mentoring people. Bring people into this. You know, one of the things that I admire you for is your availability. You've got a very busy schedule, Sabah. You've got a law practice. You've got an association to run. You've got a family to have. But you're always available to bring these messages to the other people. You're giving of yourself. This is not a pay thing for you, nor is it for me. We see these kinds of things that you do and others like you. And this is what I would wish from the best of my public and the best of my listeners, because they can do these kinds of things too. We're all just human beings on this crazy little blip in the world.
I think it's a duty of everyone to, as self-respect, and secondly, in paying a little bit of the dues to life that we are leading. We are all those people who have. We don't recognize what we have, but we have feet we use to walk with, and eyes to see, and ears, and intelligence, and all these things. And these privileges, a lot of people don't have them. And one of the ways of showing our appreciation to what we have is, in fact, to assist in the endeavor that you're doing. And this one, people don't have to pay money or whatever
no.
it is. You're asking people to share the ideas they have, to support the objectives. And that will give us all strength, and it will give others the strength to come along with us. And
we'll
win.
I agree with you. You know, Sabah, we talk each time on this show about so many subjects, and we kind of bounce around and Britain, we've kind of left that off in the last two discussions, and one of the saddest things that I've noticed, and part of my heritage is, of course, British, way back when, and, you know, here's the thing I see over there. The rot in the British structure is no less serious than it is in America, and in fact, some people believe, and I'm not convinced they're not right, is that much of this is being directed from Britain, and not necessarily an individual in Britain, and not London, of the city of London is what like a lot of people like to say, oh, it's the city of London that did it.
I can tell you this is exactly true, because if you would have been here in the 1991, the war, on the Gulf War, you would be forgiven for thinking that Britain has sent 750,000 soldiers and the Americans have sent a contingent.
Yeah.
Because the way at the time we had Maggie Thatcher talking, it actually, we were making the noises. We were making people hate us for something we are not even doing. But we thought that we have to do that. You look at the position now. We have the problem here. Our Tony is just as bad as Bush. He thinks, the two of them think like Bin Laden. They think God talks to them. And they tell them what to do. And actually, Tony thinks that history will judge him. And he thinks that history is going to judge him in the bright light. When, in fact, what he is forgetting is that we, the people, are going to judge him even before history does. He's not going to stay, this guy, because he has become an embarrassment even for the Labour Party, which is in power. So Britain, yes, it has a role. Maggie Thatcher used to brag about saying that she has told George Bush that it is not time to be wobbly, or, you know, the idea that Britain is playing a role. Yes, of course, Britain now is legislating the amount of legislations we are having. It violates every conceivable cultural, historical, legal standard we had in this country, to the extent that the other day our Home Secretary, when he was told, but isn't this contrary to the human rights treaty we have in Europe, the European treaty? He said, well, if it contradicts, we have to change the treaty.
Then Jack Straw, being a Zionist Jew, and that's exactly what he is, I'll call him what he is, the fact that he represents this kind of sickness should tell every British subject, as well as anybody listening to this program, just how the kind of hubris, the kind of incredible arrogance that this group displays. I mean, they actually believe they're going to get away with this. Astonishing to me.
Yeah, it's incredible. I've asked once some of the Conservative Party members. I said, why aren't you even on a party politics? Forget about humanity. I said, from party politics, why can't you say to the government that, look, killing civilians is not something very nice, and it doesn't help in bringing democracy, and it doesn't help bring rule of law. And somebody was sitting there, and he said, well, because the Conservatives have more skeletons in the cupboard than even the Labour, so they dare not talk about it.
Well, he may be right, because, you know, both sides of this argument have been controlled by the same group for a long time. And, you know, the way they do it, Sabah, and I think we've alluded to this in some of our conversations, they use intimidation, but more often than not, they find a peccadillo, something you've done in your past, something sick about you, and they promote you based upon their ability to control you. So, in other words, you might be a first-year backbencher in Parliament, and they find something that they can hold over your head, something quite devastating, and then all of a sudden you are the person who starts getting the assistance to go to the next level. Why? Because throughout your career they have something they can take you down with. Yeah. And of course they don't want to fall, so they've got these people up at the top of their pyramid with lots of terrible things that they've done in their past by design. And they put the people into the most important positions with these kind of compromises.
Yes, but not only that, but in fact, and I don't want to sound phobiatic, but again we get into this business of the Zionism. The Conservative Party was the party that created Israel. The Balfour Declaration was a Conservative Party idea, and the Conservative Party continues along the line because their founding leaders were the ones who created it. On the Labour side, through the International Socialist Movement, they have more Zionists within the Labour Party than even in the Conservative Party.
That's right.
So at the end of the day, one of them is the one who created Israel and created this Zionist movement, and the second one, they are controlled from within the party. So again, you have this problem of this cancer, which is, and this is why a few years back, although it is called an Arab conspiracy, the Arabs have never been able to have this power. The General Assembly of the United Nations equated Zionism with racism and with apartheid, not because they were under the influence of the Arabs or because they were Muslims, but because factually Zionism is a racist movement, and it is a movement which is a political one and nothing to do with religion or with a state or anything else. It's just a bad political movement.
Yep.
But then subsequently they managed to reverse the decision through the USA, who yet again, it's used its carrot and stick to force all the nations to come. Either they buy them or they threaten them. And that is why the world is going bad.
Well, you know, we're not going to let it go bad. We're going to have to see some darker days before bright. But the fact is that, see, we've put it all in motion. The truth is now out there. People have these files that I've put together over these last many months. The facts are out there. The audio files are there. The stories are out. The genie cannot go back in the bottle.
No.
So all it's left to do now is to fight out the next battles until they lose.
Well,
that's a fact. And so basically, how quickly or how long is it going to take before we defeat them? It's basically the question.
That's right. I think with the movement, and it's gaining momentum and gaining speed, I am confident that we will put things right.
No.
And I really would like to thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk to your listeners.
Well, you know something, Sabah, as usual, I count you among my closer friends here in this whole fight, and you're always a wonderful voice when you pick the phone up and speak to me for a couple of minutes. You're always busy, but you always get time for me.
I'm
always grateful.
To you,
thanks, Sabah, and I'll be talking to you soon, my friend.
Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye now.
Bye, thanks.
Ladies and gentlemen. That was Sabah al-Mokhtar, president of the Arab Lawyers Association of Great Britain, and my friend, and hard worker for the truth, and always, always honest. And the best thing about Sabah al-Mokhtar is he's the kindest guy you'll ever come come up with against, and he is just he's a tough lawyer and a wonderful human being. Just I got to tell you that. Anyway, today's show was of course an one in a many a series of informative discussions, and these are discussions, ladies and gentlemen, because what we're aiming to do here is to provoke your thinking, to provoke your you into understanding the dynamic that we face, the fight that we are up against, and the world as it really is. And Sabah al-Mokhtar today did exactly that. And I want to thank you for tuning in to The French Connection. My name is Darrell Bradford Smith. Until the next installment, be well. Bye-bye now.